It's Wisconsin Today. I'm Rob Ferret.
And I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Direct primary care, or DPC, is growing in popularity around the country as a supplement or even as an alternative to health insurance.
At direct primary care clinics, patients pay a monthly fee that covers regular doctor's appointments for basic illnesses and injuries, along with preventive services like physicals and cancer screenings.
It's not a form of insurance, and it doesn't cover prescription drugs or services like surgical procedures.
Between 2018 and 2023, the number of DPC and concierge practices grew by 83% nationwide. That's according to new research out of Harvard and Johns Hopkins University. Demand is expected to grow with health insurance premiums going up.
And later, we'll hear from a doctor who runs her own direct primary care practice in Fitchburg.
First, we take a look at the research on direct primary care and the impact it could have on the broader health insurance and healthcare markets. Dan Sachs is an associate professor of risk and insurance in the Wisconsin School of Business. Dan, thanks for joining us in the studio.
Glad to be here.
This idea of direct primary care, it's been around since the early 2000s. I understand it's picking up some steam. As somebody who researches the economics of healthcare, how have you been tracking these kind of practices, and what do we know?
Well, it's something that I've heard about going back several years now. I think it's fair to say it started off as kind of a boutique area of medicine. In fact, some people call it concierge medicine, and it hasn't been super large, but it's definitely growing. So the way it's worked in the past is that people, in addition to health insurance typically, will sign up for a membership with a direct primary care provider, and that basically gets them more access to their doctor. So you work with a doctor who, instead of being responsible for maybe 1,500 patients, is responsible for 500 or 600, and you're paying more, but you can lock in same-day appointments and just a lot more availability with your primary care provider.
I know a lot of research looks at insurance, the big insurance providers and things like that, so it may not be easy to get a window into questions like this, but do we really have a sense that this is on the rise lately, these direct primary care practices?
Yeah, so to the extent that there is data on it, it does show growing enrollment. So some new research has come out suggesting maybe doubling over the last few years, you know, from a very small base, but it definitely seems to be growing. To the extent that we can study it systematically, that's what we see. And then just looking around, I see more and more ads for direct primary care providers.
As you mentioned, the traditional way we think of this has been, okay, it's somebody who already has decent insurance. As you said, they do this direct primary care to get that appointment tomorrow instead of next month or whatever. I'm seeing some anecdotal suggestions that it may be people who don't have insurance or have maybe only catastrophic insurance who want to have something to get day-to-day appointments. Do we have enough window into what's going on to see if that's actually happening?
I can't tell you how much that's happening at scale. I think it is a natural impulse when people are seeing very large premium increases for continued insurance coverage with the end of these enhanced subsidies starting this year. So it makes sense to me that some people might want to switch from paying hundreds to thousands of dollars a month for insurance to something like $50 to $100 a month for direct primary care. Now, they're not getting the same thing.
Right.
Direct primary care gets you access to a doctor in primary care, but it does not get you drug coverage or specialist care or hospital care.
Right. That's something that I think most people in this are on the same page about. Make sure that the people who go into direct primary care understand it is not health insurance. There are things that aren't covered in this, and we don't want people being surprised. What kind of things do you want people to know about this as they're weighing their different options for how do I get health care?
Well, it's just not going to cover the big ticket items. So one, I think, important but maybe surprising statistic is that although for a lot of people, their primary care provider is like the face of their interaction with healthcare, only about 5% of healthcare spending is on primary care. Just the vast majority of it is on everything else. So that's drugs, but also specialist care, hospitalizations, surgeries, cancer care. And essentially none of that would be covered with direct primary care.
As we learned through the process of creating the Affordable Care Act, our healthcare system in the United States is pretty complicated, and making what might look like little changes over here can have big ripple effects in different ways. If direct primary care got bigger and more doctors were doing it, more patients were going to it, what kind of questions would you have about how that affects American healthcare overall?
Well, part of the appeal of direct primary care right now is that it's pretty hard to see a doctor. Many people don't have a primary care provider, or if they have one, they have to wait a long time to see their doctor. So that makes it naturally appealing for anyone to sign up for direct primary care. But if more and more physicians move to that model, they'll be seeing fewer patients, and that can actually exacerbate physician shortages. So, you know, if more and more physicians move to these smaller practices in the short run, it might make it harder for everyone else to have a primary care provider. In the long run, I would hope that we would see both more entry into the primary care field and possibly even higher reimbursement rates to attract more doctors into that area.
Right. That's an interesting point. Even setting aside direct primary care, do we have enough doctors as part of the overall pool of physicians going into primary care? What are some of the incentives that say, hey, doctor, you should do this versus being a specialist?
Yeah, primary care is not the most lucrative of specialties. It's not the highest paid profession, and it does not necessarily attract as many medical students as some of the specialties. It can offer better work-life balance. There's more possible control of your schedule, but that schedule control issue also is one of the things that drives people into direct primary care.
Finally, I want to get into the news now. Of course, we've got the Affordable Care Act marketplace, the COVID year enhanced subsidies are going away. People in certain categories are seeing potentially big jumps in premiums if they want to stick with their current plan. How do you see all of that fitting into the decisions people are making about their healthcare coverage?
Well, it's just going to be a lot harder for many people to get coverage. So something like 300,000 people in Wisconsin last year were eligible and took advantage of these subsidies for Affordable Care Act plans. Almost all of them are going to see lower subsidies, and many of them are going to see much higher premiums. So we're going to see people both switching more to catastrophic plans, even higher deductible plans, and increasingly people will say and have said it's just not worth it, and they're not going to get insurance coverage at all.
Dan, we'll leave it there. Thanks again for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
That was health economist Dan Sachs, associate professor of risk and insurance in the Wisconsin School of Business. We've been talking about the rise in direct primary care practices, as many Wisconsinites see a jump in health insurance costs with Affordable Care Act enhanced subsidies expiring. Now we turn to a Wisconsin doctor who made the switch and is running her own direct primary care clinic. Dr. Wendy Malaska is a board-certified family medicine physician and the owner of Dedicated Family Care in Madison. She serves on the board of the Direct Primary Care Alliance, a national organization for DPC physicians. Dr. Malaska, thanks for joining us.
I'm so excited to be here. Thanks.
What made you decide to leave what I'll call the insurance-based healthcare system and start this clinic of your own using this direct primary care model?
There were so many things that kind of led up to this. I've been doing primary care for over 20 years, and it just kept getting more and more difficult to provide the type of care I wanted to provide to my patients. Being told to do more and more with less and less, spending more time on administrative work than actually spending time with patients. So finally got to the point where once I heard about direct primary care and learned more about it, took the dive. And although I never imagined myself being a business person, and I don't necessarily like the business aspect of trying to run my own clinic, it allows me to then practice to be the type of doctor that I've always wanted to be so that I can continue to provide kind of full scope family medicine, what I call womb to tomb medicine, to my patients, get the time to spend with them, learn about them and their families, and really try to provide better access and more affordable care for them.
Well, it's interesting you mentioned the administrative time involved in dealing with the insurance system, but also now you're managing a business. Do you feel like you're spending more time doctoring and less time administering and red taping?
Oh, for sure. And that's kind of the shocking part to me is that because I don't have to worry about coding and billing and making sure that my note is written in a certain way, I can actually write my notes to reflect the care that the patient is getting and what they're saying. This takes a huge amount of the burden off and allows me, again, to focus on my patients. I'm no longer trying to type on the computer while I'm talking to them. My computer is off and I'm looking directly at my patients again. So many of my patients comment on that, too. It's like they actually feel heard again and they actually get to spend the time talking to the doc.
Now, this direct primary care, as it's a basic model. Different places might offer different kind of services and pricing and things like that. Can you give us a sense of how this works if somebody's paying, I don't know, is it monthly, annually, and then what kind of things do they get out of this model? What kind of services are part of that?
Sure. Direct primary care, as you said, you know, every clinic is slightly different. At mine, I'm family medicine, so I do everything from prenatal care up through the second trimester. I've chosen no longer to deliver babies, but continue to do some prenatal care, take care of infants, children, adults, all the way through hospice care. The monthly fee at my clinic basically covers all of your primary care needs at the clinic. So that means if you come in this week for your annual wellness visit and we diagnose you with possible new high blood pressure and we want to see you again next week, and then the week after that you cut your finger and you need stitches, and the week after that you have a sore throat and want to be tested for strep, you can be seen every week for that same one monthly fee. There are no co-pays, deductibles, co-insurance. So that really makes it a lot more affordable. A lot of my patients say that, you know, the little things can now stay little. They don't put off going to the doctor because of the worry of co-pays and co-insurance and deductibles.
One concern is that people might be paying this monthly fee and, you know, maybe they didn't read carefully, I don't know, and think, okay, I have health coverage. But there are big things that aren't on that list that aren't part of the services you provide. How do you make it clear to patients or would-be patients, these are the things that aren't covered and you'd be paying out of pocket somewhere else?
That's a great question. And the idea is trying to educate patients and the public as a whole about direct primary care and about insurance. If you think about health insurance, we use it differently than every other type of insurance. The analogy I like to use is if you look at your car insurance, you don't use your car insurance to pay for the gas in the car, to get an oil change, even when you have to pony up for some tires or a new battery, that all comes out of your own pocket. You're not using your car insurance to pay for that. That's essentially primary care. It should be easily accessible, like gas stations on every corner, sometimes making an appointment for an oil change and sometimes just driving into Jiffy Lube. The primary care should be easily accessible so that you're able to see your primary physician when you need to for acute things or schedule chronic follow-ups. It should be affordable so that, yeah, you're not going bankrupt when you're seeing your primary care. On the other hand, when you're in a car accident and you need a bunch of body work on your car or the car's totaled and you need a brand new car, that's when you use your insurance. That's when the deductibles kick in and the co-pays and the co-insurance. So for working you up for stomach pain, you can come into my clinic. There's not going to be an extra fee on top of the $85 per month. However, when we diagnose you with your gallbladder stone and you need to consider having your gallbladder taken out, that's not something I'm going to do here in the clinic. That's where you're going to need surgery. That's where I'm going to have to refer you to a surgeon. And that's where you're going to want to use your insurance.
We're talking to Dr. Wendy Malaska, board-certified family medicine physician, owner of Dedicated Family Care, a direct primary care practice in Madison. Dr. Malaska, you mentioned somebody might be doing a service like yours, this direct care, but they might also have insurance. So is it, I can imagine somebody might say, okay, my primary care, I'm going to Dr. Malaska with this monthly thing, and then I'm getting, you know, not a Cadillac kind of insurance, but a catastrophic care. So if I have that big expense, yeah, I'm paying some deductibles, but I'm not going to be paying 5-6-digit numbers once I hit that deductible. Is that what you're seeing patients do?
Yeah. So my clinic is very interesting in that we actually have a huge proportion of our patients who are completely uninsured because they're kind of falling through the cracks of making too much for Badger Care here in Wisconsin, but not having health care through their employers. So for them, we definitely talk to them about, you know, having some kind of catastrophic plan so that, again, yeah, you're not going bankrupt when you have that hospitalization that you weren't expecting. On the other hand, you are getting all of that primary care that you need so that hopefully you can avoid those other types of hospitalizations.
When it comes to regulation here, I'm sure you have your eye on things going on at the federal and state level. There's been a movement in the state legislature with a lot of bipartisan support to exempt these kind of practices from insurance commission oversight with the argument that, hey, this isn't insurance. What kind of things are you watching for, hoping for, or hoping doesn't happen when it comes to regulation of direct primary care?
Yeah, so that I think is the biggest thing that you just mentioned there is that there are at this point about 33 states across the country that have legislation that basically says that direct primary care is not insurance. And it clearly outlines in that legislation, what kind of care we provide, the fact that we're not insurance. And looking at that, we've been actually trying to pass this legislation since about 2019 here in Wisconsin. And the idea is that, yeah, if we don't fall under the insurance commission, then again, we don't have to do some of the coding and billing and all of this extra administration that just adds cost on top of the practice. Direct primary care practices tend to keep their overhead low by avoiding having to have coders and billers and somebody to follow up on denied claims and all of that kind of stuff that goes with insurance. So if we were able to get this passed here in Wisconsin, we would join the majority of states that have this legislation already in place saying that direct primary care is not insurance. It is another option for people to get health care without having to use insurance.
As you mentioned, this is a way to provide care in a way that you want to, spending more time with patients. As a business model, does it feel so far sustainable? Is this something that you think your primary care clinic and others can really do out into the future?
Oh, absolutely. So one of the arguments against DPC is that it's worsening the physician workforce shortages. However, in 2019, when I was changing my practice and then opening my direct primary care, I was at the point of burnout in the systems that I worked for that it was going to be no patients and I was just going to leave medicine entirely. Once I heard about DPC and saw the way that this was able to be done and the fact that, you know, this kind of met all of my qualifications, I can have a clinic that serves underserved populations. I can, you know, focus on patient care. I can provide acute, chronic, preventative care. That really made me realize that, yes, I can still be a doctor and provide the kind of care that I want and still see patients. I'm no longer seeing 2,500 patients on my panel. I'm seeing 600, but I would say that those 600 are getting much better care than when I was in the system and I had 2,500 patients who couldn't get an appointment to see me for 3 months, who were told to go to the ER or urgent care because my schedule was full.
Finally, we're seeing the end of enhanced Affordable Care Act marketplace subsidies affecting many people, premiums going up as well for many of the marketplace plans. Are you seeing that coming in your door? Are you hearing from patients or maybe getting interest from potential patients who are seeing those premiums change?
Absolutely. So we're seeing a couple of different things, which has been kind of interesting with the ACA premiums going up. One is patients who are actually dropping our services because they feel like they need to have some kind of insurance and the ACA is what's available to them. But now they can't afford even that catastrophic plan on top of a monthly fee at our primary care clinic. We've seen some patients drop it. On the other hand, we're seeing patients drop the ACA and say, well, at least I have the primary care and hopefully nothing goes wrong. And so I will kind of take my chances and hopefully not have to worry about insurance. And then we're seeing those who are changing their plans within the ACA so that they are going with the more catastrophic, higher deductible plans and then coming in and saying, hey, what do we do to help supplement that? And that's where we're seeing a lot of people coming in and saying, oh, direct primary care, that seems to be perfect here. I won't have to use my deductibles and I can get all of that primary care without having to worry about it.
Dr. Malaska, thanks again for joining us.
Thank you so much.
Dr. Wendy Malaska is a board-certified family medicine physician and the owner of Dedicated Family Care, a direct primary care clinic in Fitchburg. Earlier, we heard from health economist Dan Sachs from the Wisconsin School of Business about how the uptick in direct primary care practices could affect the health insurance and healthcare landscapes overall.